Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Glad to have you along. Ted Ross in the controls today. And Ted, this is kind of a light week for a lot of people between Christmas and New Year's, and people taking time off.
Yeah, taking time off, taking time with family, perhaps. It's always good. That's what I plan to do, is to be with my wife and daughters.
And the same for me, which is why we're sharing a recorded program today.
Okay.
So we're not actually here, even though we're here. But I know we're going to talk today about daughters in danger. I know, Ted, you have a couple of daughters. You worry about them and kind of their future sometimes?
Well, one just turned 13, and the other one is going to be 15 here in April. Yeah. So we're in that teenage time, which can be extra dangerous in some parents' minds, and I think there's some truth to that. So,
The fact is that, you know, we live in a culture that really pushes girls to be more aggressive and more sexual, you know, and we're going to find out today that, you know, those feminist ideals haven't really worked very well for today's girls.
Sad but true. And you throw in social media and the access to the internet at just seconds away from fingertips and everything that they can find on there. It's kind of scary.
Bullying and all those things. Yeah. Chuck Colson also say, you know, ideas have consequences. Mm-hmm. And we'll learn more about some of these ideas and the kind of consequences they're having as we talk today with Elaine Bennett. And she has a new book called Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. We're going to find out about, you know, how parents can really be more engaged in helping their kids.
It's so helpful for parents to have conversations like this. We constantly need that assistance. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
We're going to talk about some frankly bad ideas that are creating problems today, and it's prompted the book and our conversation today called Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. And the book is written by Elaine Bennett, who serves as the founder and director of the Best Friends Foundation and is an avid spokeswoman on issues of adolescent behavior and development. And she's the wife of William J. Bennett and the mother of two sons. And we're honored to have her with us today on Connecting Faith. Welcome, Elaine. It's good to talk with you.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show, and I'm delighted that you want to bring good information to your listeners.
Maybe we need to, by way of just beginning, and this is a new book just came out from Thomas Nelson called Daughters in Danger. In the broad picture, give us a sense of kind of what you're talking about in terms of the danger and the harm that the girls in our culture are facing today.
Well, our culture is more vulgar, and it's more violent and more sexualized than ever before. And just the teenage girls are reporting 40% know someone who has been hit or beaten. And we know that of course, bullying has taken on a new dimension. And what this book is about is, it can be a good news book. We have to go through the bad news, but then there are things that can be done. We know that parents who take action and instruct their daughters in what they are about to face as they step out into the world, particularly in the college scene, that can be a sense of protection for them. But to say nothing and to do nothing puts our girls in a really vulnerable situation. And I believe that this is the real war on women, that pop culture and social media is really out there not doing good things for our girls right now. And I do think it's not fair to our daughters to put them in a situation with few guardrails and expect them to thrive. The universities have, of course, gone with this whole notion that young people, 18 to 21, should be able to live together in dorms and share bathrooms, and everything will be fine. That's about being mature. And we know that has not been a good situation on many college campuses. We know that binge drinking has taken off. It's three times more likely now that girls in college will binge drink. Alcohol rate has increased among girls, much higher girls than boys. So throwing girls in with boys, expecting them to be able to party, and no consequences, just the data's not there to support that.
You mentioned drinking. We'll just start with that, because I'm interested to know, as you said, it was pretty startling to read that there has been a dramatic increase in drinking among young women on campus. So what's behind that particular change for the worse?
Well, and that's a good question, and I wish we knew exactly, but there's been a lot of discussion and on the fact that girls think that they have the right and the privilege to be like the guys. The guys can go out and drink and drink to drunkenness, that they ought to be able to do that too. And girls, I think, are feeling a lot of stress, and they see alcohol as a way to relieve that stress. Although what happens often when alcohol is used to great excess, there's a lot of stress the next day, thinking, what have I done? What have I said? I feel terrible. And there's regret. I think girls are having regret about some of this behavior. We're not sure why they've decided. I think social media, I think obviously just looking at the pop culture, you see girls, well, look at Rihanna on stage, look at Beyonce, their behavior, their extremely sexualized music and dance, all and of course alcohol is all a big part of that. It's if it feels good, do it. And doesn't feel good the next day.
No. you know, one of the main points of this book is to sort of pull back the curtain, I guess, to look at the way progressive feminism has undermined girls and women while weakening boys and men. And we'll kind of unpack that as we go along. But the idea of this sort of highly sexualized culture, was that an original, you think, idea or a tenet of the feminism? I mean, there's one thing to have sort of equal pay issues or, you know, right to vote or, you know, but it seems like we have focused entirely on sexuality.
Well, it does seem that way. I don't know if that certainly was an original goal of feminism, having kind of giving women free rein in their sexuality, enjoyment, I guess. But it seems that certainly happening. It's certainly happening in the culture. And I have some real problems with how feminism has evolved. I think the original intent, which many would support, is equal pay for equal work. And that was a respectable and perhaps desirable goal. But it has become so much more than that now. And I think one of the things to do for people who want to know about feminism is to read a little bit about Margaret Sanger and who she was and what she believed.
That's not a message that you're going to hear any of the current modern leaders of the feminist movement bringing up, is it? I mean, that's not a story they want told.
No, they really don't. I mean, Hillary was happy to receive the Margaret Sanger, I think it was a award for leadership. But, you know, if we really want to look at Margaret, there's no doubt that she was a racist and a confirmed racist. So that whole story just has not been explored. You're exactly right about that.
We're talking about the new book from Elaine Bennett called Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. We touched a little bit about kind of what's going on, particularly on the college university campuses. You know, one of the things you talked about, the increase in drinking, it does seem like, you know, as I was just reading one example after another, and many of them, you know, sad examples of abuse and even murders, that universities have kind of incoherent policies in terms of the way that they expect girls and boys to behave around each other. Talk about that.
Well, I think we know, and tragically we know, that the increase in murders on campus, the increase in, and I'm not just saying sexual assault, but rape and physical attack has got to raise great concern. I know it raises concern among parents, particularly, I guess, on the college campuses, because here they're spending a significant amount of money to send their daughters into an environment that they hope will be a positive one, one in which she will learn, one in which she will mature, and she'll have the kind of experiences that will you know, serve her well in her future and in her pursuit of of a career, or obviously many young women want someday to be married. They want to be good mothers. They want to be a part of our of a family. So I think what's happened is the universities think that in order to, I don't know whether they're thinking that this will entice more students if they have a party school mentality, so they don't want to interfere with that. But what they're not doing is providing the safeguards. We know that. We know that's just been proven time after time. Some universities, and I've done some research into this, like Princeton and Davidson, and some of the ones that I have looked at, have instituted a no-contact order, which will keep, it's a dean's no-contact order. And it would be a great thing if every university had this. It will keep away a harasser, it will keep away if a young girl, or, you know, certainly a young male student feels harassed by another student. This dean's no-contact order means that the harasser will risk expulsion if they tend to invade this person's personal space, if they come after them, if they send them emails and texts and so forth. And this could be a real deterrent. But for some reason, it's just not in place on many campuses. And that's something that is not that difficult to do. Another thing that works is the Good Samaritan law, that if a student reports trouble with drinking or drugs or sees someone who's seriously, you know, in a bad way physically, then his own sobriety or her own sobriety is not questioned. So many students, you know, I'm sure you've heard of this, they'll take, and typically it's a female, and they'll dump her on the doorstep of the emergency room, the local hospital, and then take off because they don't want to be charged because they know they're intoxicated as well. So they run. And there's a way to, I think there's a way to guard against. And the other thing that we have worked so hard in the Best Friends Program, which is a program I started 28 years ago at Georgetown University, and then it grew into programs really across the country. We actually had a great one in Minneapolis. And what we do is we start with middle schoolers, and we talk to them about what friends do for each other, what friends don't do for each other, and how to be better friends. Because we know the peer group is a critical, it can be a protective force or it can be a destructive force. And we work to make it a protective and a positive force.
Talking with Elaine Bennett today about her new book just out called Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. Elaine, as mentioned, is the founder and director of the Best Friends Foundation, an avid spokeswoman on issues of adolescent behavior and development. And we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment as we review this new book. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and my guest today is Elaine Bennett. Elaine has written a new book called Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. Elaine is the founder and director of the Best Friends Foundation, and she mentioned just a little bit about that program and how it works, and we'll develop that a little bit more as we go along. One of the conversations, as you spell out in the book, is, in fact, the title of one of the chapters, In Loco Parentis. You know, we send our kids to the colleges and universities, hoping that they will still have some parental influence in terms of the administration of the universities, the campuses. It doesn't seem like, you know, maybe parents need to be, even though we don't like helicopter parents, maybe we need to be more involved because the universities, sometimes political correctness seems like it's ruling the day.
Well, you know, Neil, I kind of like helicopter parents, to tell you the truth. I kind of think that an ostrich parent is worse. You know, a parent who sticks his or her head in the sand is not always being doing the best thing for their child. Parents do have to stay tuned in, and they do have to be aware of who their child's friends are. And, you know, when I say child, I'm talking about the college child. as well. I mean, who are they spending time with? We do know that, again, as I said, the peer group is very influential on risk behavior. If your daughter is in a positive peer group where there's low risk behavior, then she is in a safer situation than if she's not. I do think colleges have abandoned their in loco parentis responsibility. I don't know why that is. They're charging more and more money. And then they don't provide, you know, the safety measures. There's not enough lights on campus. There's not a system for girls who are feeling harassed or are in danger on many of these campuses. I mean, University of Maryland has come up with an it's called the Emergency App. And so a student who's walking at night from the library back to her dorm, and again, this is for guys as well, they can connect to a public safety dispatcher and give out, you know, where they're headed, and they can have them even on a live audio, and the GPS will follow them. This simple app would have saved several girls' lives I know of in the past several months who disappeared. You know, we had the lovely girl at University of Virginia, Hannah, who got lost. She'd been drinking. And she got lost, and she was calling her friend, and she couldn't even tell her friend where she was. And consequently, you know, a predator, a horrible predator who'd already killed in the past, was able to get, you know, sadly, end her life. And simple things like that. I mean, we have apps for everything else. Yeah. There's no reason why we can't have an app that a student can access, and students will access them if they don't think they'll be in any way, you know, victims of a. Well, I don't want to say victims, but students are so afraid of any kind of restriction or licensure against them. So if they're worried that if they've been drinking, they'll be cited with a drinking, public drunkenness or a DUI. And so consequently, a lot of behavior does not get treated. And we can end that. We can change that practice, frankly.
You mentioned, and we don't want to, you know, dwell on it entirely during our conversation, but you mentioned the, you know, predators. I mean, you even tell a story in the book about your own experience where you, you know, thought you were innocently helping someone. And the fact is that as the guards seem like they go down more, that there is a growing threat of predators and certainly bullying and those things. I mean, that college campuses are kind of prime ground, and perhaps high school campuses as well.
Well, they certainly are, and we know that bullying, sadly, has increased 30% just among middle schoolers. And we know that boys who are bullies in middle school tend to become more violent to their girlfriends later. They get away with bullying in middle school, bullying their peers or bullying other boys, they'll bully girls in a romantic relationship. That's another big reason to jump on bullying right away. And, you know, I know it's people don't want to, you know, a certain amount of bullying goes on and everybody says, oh, I was bullied. And it's just what happens with kids. And let's don't get all in a public stew about it and wrongly convict some little kid who says something offensive to another little kid. But we're not talking about that. We know when bullying is serious, it's not hard to determine. We know about these flame wars that have started because now we have social media where one nasty comment can take on a whole new dimension. One mean comment can go viral. And we know adolescents say things in text they would never have the confidence to say to someone in person or to someone's face. And parents should be monitoring their children's phones, frankly. If they're going to give their child, and now we know that a lot of middle schoolers have cell phones, then they need to have a parental guard on them, and they need to monitor these phones.
You know, as you address in the book Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture, you point out that you know, the current feminist beliefs actually corrupts our young men and empowers the strong while penalizing the weak. Just to say more about how we've ended up actually creating a greater problem than we've had in the past.
Well, it's, I think, under the guise or under the rubric of feminism, our colleges and universities now are so timid about seeing things and taking action when there's clear reason to, because they're afraid of offending. And you know, we've gotten very good examples of that right now.
Yeah.
Going on with occupying the president's office. When there are other ways to, when you need to make change, there's a way to do that through petitioning and through mature discussion. And for some reason, that's just not happening. As far as why we've got more, and I think we definitely do have more danger on our campuses than we had in the past, is, you know, as you know, there's just been a breakdown of civility. There's been the increase in vulgarity, so that what was offensive and I'll just use the word immoral behavior in the past, people don't want to judge that now. And the lack of being called, you know, this lack of using judgment, which is a very good thing. God gave us judgment powers. God gave us a brain to think things through. Consequently, it's a anything goes. Well, people will say things like, well, those aren't my values, but who am I to judge? And unfortunately, with this kind of incredible open-mindedness, we are allowing behavior that was not allowed in the past. And we've put some of our weakest members, and often they happen to be female, and we put them in jeopardy. I mean, it's girls, I have it in my book, stories, many stories of girls being taken advantage of in the dormitory bathrooms, girls just trying to get into their locked dorm and don't have their key, things happening in that regard, guys thinking after they've had a lot to drink and the girl's had a lot to drink that she's willing, you know, she's not going to say no simply because she doesn't have the capacity to say no. And there's been a lot of regret the next day, and not just heartache, but true physical endangerment.
We're going to continue the conversation in a moment because there is some good news, there's some hope, there's some ways in which we can help our girls thrive in today's culture. That's the subtitle of Elaine Bennett's new book called Daughters in Danger. We'll talk more with Elaine in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We've connected with Elaine Bennett today, who serves as the founder and director of the Best Friends Foundation. She's an avid spokeswoman on issues of adolescent behavior and development, wife of William J. Bennett, mother of two sons, and has written this powerful book looking at how our culture today oftentimes devalues girls and their needs and desires in ways that are really harmful. And we're going to talk about some ways that we can turn this around. I do have to ask, maybe before we get into talking about some turnaround opportunities, boys aren't without impact as well, right? They've been sort of targeted since grade school, right, by, you know, radical views that have suggested that, you know, they need medication, perhaps.
Well, yes, you're talking about the incredible increase in ADT, ADD,
yeah,
and ADHD diagnoses, and that's that's a topic of about 45 books, and there does seem to be a real tendency for the active boy, and I know a lot about active boys, both of mine were, and frankly, both of them, was recommended to me in the third grade, that they go on medication, and I said no. I was, my background is special education, and I had worked with learning disabled children. I had worked with classically hyperactive children, and I'm not saying that that situation doesn't exist, because it does, but there is clinically hyperactive, and then there is the teacher who doesn't want to be bothered with very active boys. And I found a school that was wonderful for our boys, Catholic boys' school, and academic instruction ended at lunch, and the whole afternoon was outside. Outside in physical activity of sports or relays or just, and bingo, guess what happened to the hyperactivity? It went away. And I'm so glad, because we know some of the impact of that long-term medication. And again, I want to say there certainly are situations where medication is called for and does serve the child. But it's just a mystery as to why this incredible increase in the number of, you know, the number of diagnostic valves being done and in the very high number of ADHD children, particularly boys.
It is interesting, though, isn't it, that the rule of the day or the narrative of the day is that, well, there's no difference between boys and girls, you know, no matter kind of what their age. And, you know, we, I guess, kind of shake our heads and go, well, how did that narrative even gain traction today?
That's a great question, because there are differences. We know there are innate differences. As a child developmentalist who has studied children and worked with children from infancy to birth, and then 3 to 5 year olds, and then in adolescence, there are distinct differences. And in my book, you know, boys are not the villains; they're the victims as well. Boys have been hurt. We know that boys now are the minority in colleges and universities. In my alma mater, it's 63% female. And you have to wonder, why is this happening? Boys are much more likely to drop out of school. Boys are much more likely not to be employed. So I'm very concerned about what's happening with both genders, both male and female. In fact, our program, Best Friends, started for girls, but because we were so successful, and interestingly enough, the principals saw the girls just having a great success, said, what are you doing for the boys? And even the boys themselves would come to our classrooms and say, why can't we be in this program? So we started Best Men, and one of our slogans in Best Men is challenging boys to become men worthy of respect. And this really took off with our young boys starting in the sixth grade. They responded to the structure. They responded to our curriculum about saying no to drugs and alcohol and sexual activity. They responded to being involved in community service. And we saw great results, great research results. The boys, we had a good number of boys who quit drinking, who'd been drinking. Boys who'd been sexually active decided they were going to stop, you know, and wait. So, as I said, we can do things for our adolescents. We don't have to wring our hands and say, well, this is just youth, and there's nothing we can do, and the kids aren't going to talk to us. Interestingly, they do talk, and they do respond. I have to say that in 28 years, I have never had a student, and I've had in D.C. schools almost, I would say close to 20,000 students go through this program. I do not recall one single student we had to give up on. Or who walked out, frankly. We didn't have any students who wanted to leave the program, which was a wonderful thing. We brought in male role model speakers. We brought in, and of course, female role model speakers for the girls. And we brought, every student had a mentor. And many of the boys had to be, were certainly mentored by female teachers, because there are not that many males in the lower grades. And that worked effectively, too. And it was just a great thing for our students to be able to go on campus, go in their classrooms, and just look down the hall and see a teacher who cared and say, that's my four. And he or she is going to know if I'm not at school. He or she is going to talk to other teachers and find out if I'm doing okay. And this is what I think we're missing today in some of our schools, or many of our schools. Teachers don't want to take that extra bit of time for lots of reasons, either because if they show an interest in a student, they can be expected or they can be criticized for, well, why are you so interested in you know, this child? But if a teacher can say, well, I'm his mentor, I have a mentor contract here, this is a part of a program, I'm a part of a national program, and this is what we're doing, then, you know, that settles any question. And it gives teachers who are naturally, I think many teachers want to be more involved and want to have an impact on their students' character and their personal lives, but they're, again, afraid to.
One of the hopefully results of a book like Daughters in Danger is that, you know, that fear and some of those barriers can be broken down, and we can, as the subtitle suggests, help our girls thrive in today's culture. Elaine, one of the areas you talk about and that doesn't get much press or coverage is the fact that marriage is a powerful indicator of success for students of any age. Just say more about the challenge of single parenthood in today's culture.
Well, it's single parents are greatly challenged, and it's not to say that there aren't wonderful single moms and single dads who have done very good jobs in trying to be good examples for their children. But if you do, and you're right, look at the research. Married people are happier. Married people, if you just want to look at it economically, have higher economic success, and certainly children in two-parent households are in better shape emotionally as well as financially. And, you know, sadly, in the Bush administration, there was a great program called the Healthy Marriage Project through HHS, and Best Friends Foundation received 5 years of funding, and it's where we developed our high school program and expanded, and it was a terrific endeavor, and these were programs funded around the country, and one of the goals was to show students that marriage is a positive thing and a good thing. Because in our inner-city schools, perhaps maybe 25 to 30% of the students come from two-parent households. And it worked very, very well. It's not in existence any longer, or it's been greatly diminished, because I think the people are so reluctant to talk about marriage because they're afraid that we will force traditional marriage on their students, and that is a sad thing. When we know it's a positive, and it's been a positive for what, centuries, and it's just sad. The other thing too, you know, churches have been excluded, religion has been excluded from our public education environment, and we do know that students who attend church and associate with others who do the same are much more likely to delay sexual activity and not to engage in misbehavior. And I remember we had all kinds of wonderful meetings and when I was in high school with Young Life, and Young Life was allowed on campus after school, but that doesn't happen any longer. There's just a great concern that somehow students will be forced into participating in something they don't want to, even when it's very clear it's an after-school activity. I am saddened that marriage is not discussed as it should be. It appears that it's alive and well in the higher socioeconomic groups, I mean, most college graduates are wanting to be married, and I've seen my son's friends are marrying, and it seems that this it's seen as a desirable thing, but it's not, it's just not happening in among our minorities as it had in the past. And I think you can see some of the results of the breakdown of the family.
We're talking about Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. That's the title of a new book from Elaine Bennett. Elaine is the founder and director of Best Friends Foundation, and she's an avid spokeswoman on issues of adolescent behavior and development. She is a member of the Ethics, Religion, and Public Policy Task Force in the National Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, wife of William J. Bennett, and mother of two sons. And we're going to take one more segment to talk with Elaine and come away with some practical steps how maybe mothers, fathers, sisters, and brothers and friends can be involved in saving our daughters. We'll get to that in just a moment. Stay tuned to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today on Connecting Faith. So we've been talking with Elaine Bennett about her new book and an area of passion for her called Daughters in Danger. How do we help our girls thrive in today's culture? You know, culture is not particularly kind to today's woman. Despite all the supposed success and efforts, the ideas have consequences, and progressive feminism has had a lot of the wrong answers and inadequate solutions. But the book, Daughters in Danger, does suggest the practical ways in which moms and dads and sisters and brothers and friends can make a difference. Maybe just say a word about mothers first, and then let's talk fathers and kind of go down the line, and we'll talk about best friends as well. But what would you say maybe for moms, how could they change maybe the way they're relating to the daughter to protect them more effectively?
Well, I think the first step is communication. Talk to your daughter. Keep those channels open. Don't think because she's not talking to you that you need to leave her alone. You know, continue to talk to her in as calm a way as you can. I understand that it's often very frustrating when your daughter or your son shuts down and appears to want to shut you out. But often that's when they're the most troubled. And that's when just being there, just having, knowing that they're loved. I think a lot of the young people today aren't sure about love. They're not sure if their parents really love them. And particularly when they leave their home and they go out into that big cold world on that college campus, and they're trying to study and they want to get good grades and they don't want to flunk out, and then they've got the stress of the social life, and they're scared, they're frightened. And instead of worrying about being a helicopter mom or dad, I think you need to make sure, take those trips on campus, drop in, you know, every couple of weeks or so, and keep those phone calls going, not just text or emails, but connect with them, let them hear your voice. You know, being a cool mom was seen as kind of a neat thing to be, but I'd rather see warm mothers. I'd rather see a mom who inspires her daughter intellectually and encourages, but also encourages her to have compassion for others. I think we've missed some of the altruism of mother-daughter relationships. Girls can be very competitive as adolescents when they're 12, 13, 14. And if mothers play into that, in that competitive, who's got the coolest clothes and the coolest hair and the who's on the right team and so on and so forth, then what happens to this very important character trait of compassion, of caring about the girl who's left out, instead of just always wanting to be part of the cool group? So again, you know, cool moms need to think about being warm moms that short-term happiness is not always, and we know it's not, shouldn't be the ultimate goal. The mothers need to help their daughters think of the long haul. Who do you want to be? What kind of young woman do you want to be? What kind of life do you want to have? And then fathers truly need to be there for their daughters. Fathers are very important in raising self-confident daughters. If a dad thinks if he's not involved, or if he's even overly critical, it can have a devastating effect on an adolescent girl, particularly when no adolescent girl thinks she's attractive. I frankly think fathers should just praise their daughters as much as they possibly can. Tell them they look pretty. Tell them, compliment them. And then they can, if there's some big brothers around, and get the big brother to talk about, well, it's not such a cool thing to go out in public in super revealing clothes, that guys really don't like girls who are, as they say, showing a lot of skin. Help her understand what is seen as and what are the traits that young men look for in girls, and because they're trying to sort it out, and many girls don't have fathers in the home to guide them. They don't have fathers also to do the very valuable thing of teaching them what they shouldn't stand for. Used to be the father would meet the guy that came to the door to take his daughter out and, say, look, you have her back by 11:30 or you're in big trouble. That's not having, that's just not happening like it used to. We know that fathers are the key to emotional security of their daughters, and they need to communicate how much they love and appreciate their daughters and assure them that they're worthy of being treated with respect. And, if there's no father to do that, and sadly, in many households they're not, mothers should try and seek out other trustworthy family members to do this, because these are key times between that adolescent period of about 11 to about 17, 18, and really 21-year-olds are still adolescents. Nobody seems to want to consider them as adolescents, but they are very much so. And they need to be nurtured and instructed, because they most, as I've discovered, most students want to do, most children want to do the right thing.
Elaine, I wonder, we've got a few minutes left in our conversation. I wonder if you'd maybe just speak to the girls listening, the daughters listening that may not realize they're in danger, but they're dealing with stress or questioning self-respect. What's the message you want them to hear, and what's your encouragement to them today?
Oh, that's a great question. I would tell girls to have courage, to work on their own respect by knowing, who they are and what they stand for. As we tell our girls and best friends, if you do not stand for something, you will stand for anything. And we also say the best kind of friend to have is that person who helps you be a better person. So seek out those people who make you feel like you're a better person, who encourage you to be the best you can be. And to accept responsibility for that, not to just go with the flow, but accept responsibility and say, I'm going to take action here. This is my life. And to have you're in college, you're growing up, evaluate what you're doing. Don't just say, oh, that looks like fun, I'll do that. But evaluate the situation before you make a decision. And don't give up. Don't give up or give in. Don't just go with the flow. Don't get your wisdom from the crowd. We even have a song in Best Friends. Listen to Don't Give In to Wisdom from the Crowd. When they pull you down, just listen to, and then we go into our Best Friends refrain. And in regard to their parents, if young girls are listening, don't shut out mom. Mom wants to know what's going on in your life. And don't shut out dad either. You might be worried about things. You might think, well, they don't understand, or it's popular to talk about how how stupid your parents are. But remember, they were adolescents themselves, and many times they do understand. And young people need to open up to their parents. And also, if you have a friend who's in trouble, if you see your friend, if you're a girl, you see your friend being influenced maybe by a boy who's not good for her, who's encouraging her to do things she's not ready for, and encouraging her to engage in the kind of risk behavior that's going to be destructive to her, take a stand. And if she doesn't listen to you, which could often be the case, seek out your school counselors and say, I'm worried about my friend. She needs help, and I don't know how to help her. And school counselors have a responsibility to reach out and keep a confidence. Professionally, they're not to share who told them things. You can talk to adults and seek them out. First talk to your mother or your father and get advice, and then have your mother make the call to a professional or to this child's parents. You might lose her friendship if she finds out for a while, but in my experience, friends who realize that their friends care about them and care about their best, have their best actions as their primary goal, and they want to see them succeed, really will come back around. And you'll have a friend for life if you take a stand and you help someone who's hurting.
You'll find some hard-won wisdom in this book from Elaine Bennett. It's called Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. You'll not only get a clear understanding of the impact of today's culture on our daughters, our sisters, our grandchildren, and you'll also find some great encouragement on ways that we can begin to help our girls thrive in today's culture, as the subtitle suggests. Daughters in Danger is the title of the book. Elaine Bennett is my guest, the founder and director of the Best Friends Foundation. Elaine, is there a web address for Best Friends?
Yes, there is. BestFriendsFoundation.org. www.bestfriendsfoundation.org.
All right.
And we are actually working on getting our latest Stop the Silence, Prevent the Violence seminars up on our web so that people can know what we're doing and hopefully participate. Schools, we've had great success. We had over 400 students in our anti-violence seminars last year and had great results from our pre-post surveys. So we've got the curriculum, we've got the model, and we certainly are there to help.
We wish you all the success because it's a critical area, and thank you for being on the front lines and for talking with us today. It's good to visit with you. Thanks so much.
It's been a very productive afternoon, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Once again, the name of the book is Daughters in Danger, Helping Our Girls Thrive in Today's Culture. And it's new from Thomas Nelson. If you missed part of today's conversation, or you'd like to listen to it again, or better yet, pass it on to a friend, you can go to our Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com and listen to the interview podcast. And this and many other interviews are available there as well. Feel free to share them. They're all shareable, and it's a wonderful way to tell others about the great programming every day here on Faith Radio. And thank you, by the way, for your gifts that make this programming possible. As the year comes to a close, we'd be honored to have you stand with us for the year-end gift. You can make that gift online as well at myfaithradio.com. And Happy New Year from all of us here at Faith Radio.